males, in my experience, are more into status. They do a lot more jousting for status, more kind of trying to figure out who's the boss here and all that. And the females just go into dictatorships. You know, there's no fight here. I'm it, and you're gone. You know, you're out of here.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is, that's just my experience. That's not, you know. So the males can kind of get a working truce, where you go, okay, well, I'm more dominant than you are outside, and you are more dominant inside, or whatever. Also, the other thing about females is if they decide they don't like another female, they just want her out or dead. They don't go.
It's very clear.
It's very clear.
Yeah. Buffy, she had a little, and she had five boys and one girl. And as soon as the girl was gone to Tom, which was a block away, she would not ever acknowledge her again, where she would totally, like, her sons, she would, like, try to basically meet up, have fun with them. Mm-hmm. And then her daughter, she just, and the daughter wanted to see her mom, and she's just
aww,
like, you're dead to me.
You're gone, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, even Aspen's mom, there were three puppies, the two boys and a girl, and Chanel did not like Aspen, kicked her out. But that was really, I think, an individual dog thing. It's just that, you know, I actually did a PowerPoint or did a seminar on, you know, girls will be girls, because it's so hard to get dogs, the female dogs, to live together if they don't live together well. We have three girl dogs and one male, so we have no problems whatsoever. They all like each other. They can pile on top of each other. Nobody gets their nose out of joint for anything. But if you don't, if your two dogs, it's like if you have border collies. If you have two female border collies, mm-hmm, you have competition. And a male and a female, you don't have that same kind of competition. There's some, but there just isn't as bad. And males have a tendency to do the competing and to kind of stay friends. And the females, if they start competing, they actually become enemies.
What about the in-tech male or the New York male?
That actually depends on their history a lot. If they knew each other from the time, like the in-tech male was very young, and the other dog, the older dog, was neutered, sometimes you're just fine. If you introduce an in-tech dog into a home with a neutered dog, you often have issues. And it's usually the neutered dog attacking the intact dog, not the other way around. People think of it as being the other way around, and it's not. I think that neutered dogs get very confused by intact dogs, and because they don't see them very much anymore. But also they feel threatened by them. And the latest studies have shown that there is a higher degree, I think I mentioned this already, there is a higher degree of aggression in neutered males and females than there is in intact males and females.
There's a huge rise of intact animals.
Yeah.
Like,
that's interesting, because I know it's way more expensive to have an intact male, you know, or an intact dog.
Yeah, they're really, it's the parts has just gotten really common.
Huh? Oh, the licensing fee is way higher.
Yeah, we already thought of these. We're all just
trying. I'm neurotically early, so I can tell you
that you're not neurotically early today. You may have felt like that, but nobody's sitting in this one right over here. If you want to get up closer, yeah. So
especially the Frenchies, it seems like there's tons of Frenchies. India.
Well, see, the thing is that the veterinary community is now getting on the don't neuter the dogs too early bandwagon too, because actually, particularly in the bigger breeds like Labs and whatnot, you get a much more of a tendency towards ligament and bone issues with dogs that are neutered too early. So, I mean, we, even years ago, we'd call dogs that are pediatrically neutered, which is what they do at shelters. You know, they neuter them or spay them at 8 weeks. And we'd call it, they have the long skinnies. We knew it. They became adult. Yeah, I can take a look at a dog and go, that's a neutered dog, and he's been neutered since he was 8 weeks old. It's just so easy to see it because that's, you know, they have a different look to them. And so they get these kind of leggy look, and they look like sausages on sticks. Their torso is is not formed, and then they have these long, skinny legs.
They had guide dogs when I was there. They were doing crossing, just starting to cross Goldens and Labs, and they were neutering them all in 8 weeks. And so you get these dogs that were 3 to 4 or 5 inches taller than they would have been. I had an 85-pound dog when I was training, and he came back from being out with a Prince person with urinary tract issues. It was an 85-pound dog. They couldn't get a premature puppy catheter up.
Oh my goodness, it was so, yeah, the eeny weeny peeny club.
Because, well, that's the other thing is that the early neuters don't.
They don't. So if I had a male dog.
Don't form their genitalia.
They do not, yeah, they don't form anything like normal genitalia. If I was going to get a male dog, I wouldn't get it from a shelter because they sterilize too early now, as far as I'm concerned. So if you get a dog that comes in from, you know, like, and is surrendered as an adult, that's fine. They can be neutered then. But the puppies, like this little one here, I wouldn't put it in the shelters. And, you know, although it's a little dog puppy, so it's a little breed pup, but it still probably has. I mean, we have our hormones for a reason. They're not just something that you throw away. When I was a kid, everybody. There was this thing. Everybody had their tonsils taken out. It was amazing. It was like the doctors found tonsils and they thought, let's take them out. And no, they never took mine out either. I have 11 brothers and sisters. There's no way that my mom was going to let them, you know, all of us have our tonsils taken out. And I don't even know if any of us got our tonsils taken out. But it was a fad. It was as though they were saying, well, you don't need your tonsils and you don't need your appendix, so let's just take them out. But of course, there's just because we don't think they need something doesn't mean that they don't need something. It just means that we don't need anything, you know. So it's just weird. It's just weird.
So, yeah. So there's a question. When to neuter boy dogs?
Boy dogs, well, some of it depends on the behavior of your little boy. If he's being obnoxious, how old is he now?
11 months.
11 months? Right now is fine. Yeah, right now is fine. He's got probably 80 to 90% of his growth, maybe even a little bit more.
What kind of dog is
it? He's a border collie and he's showing testosterone poisoning.
Yes.
What's that?
Wanting to mount everything and bully other dogs.
So
he just wants to bully the weaker ones.
The picture of the big border collie-ish dog with the stuffed dog?
Uh-huh.
That's the behavior.
Oh, that's naughty.
It's like roll on.
And then stand over him and go, look at me.
Yeah.
I am just so cool and a half. Yeah. Yeah. So now.
Neutering stop that?
Neutering and your help.
Training.
Yes.
Training.
You have training. To not allow it as much as possible. And can you figure out who it is that he's going to go after?
Yeah.
And you can figure them out in advance?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just avoid them like
play. Yeah. You could do a DRI. You could just do a, you know, teach him that when he sees this kind of animal, he's supposed to do something else for you. So as opposed to avoidance, because if you do constant avoidance, then eventually you'll start extending your avoidance. And it won't be just I'm avoiding, you know, certain kinds of dogs. You'll be, you know, kind of hedging your bet. Yeah, I mean, you know, I just got an email from somebody, I haven't seen her yet, but I just got an email from somebody whose dog attacked a small dog, and she was attacked it and did some damage. And so now she's terrified of going outside. She knows that the dog is, the behavior is aimed at small dogs, but because of this particular episode, she's not taking her dog anywhere. And she's got her dog, you know, on a muzzle, and which is appropriate in this case. It's definitely appropriate. I saw a dog yesterday that was just really exciting. The behavior was supposed to be that the dog was not necessarily good on walks with other dogs. She wants to meet other dogs a lot, really tries to meet other dogs, and then after she's met the other dog, if the dog gets too close to her, she attacks him. So she's conflicted.
Yeah.
So she really wants to go visit, but then if they're there for too long, we call that a snark attack. You know, they're sniffing for too long, that time spent sniffing, it's too long, and then she'll just turn around and nail them. Now, she doesn't ever hurt them, she just makes them scream. And you know, dogs are good at screaming.
Yeah.
Man, they're so, and they'll scream when you're not even touching them. They're really good at preemptive screaming. So I said, okay, I'd come over and see her and all that kind of stuff. So I get to the door, and here's this Catahoula that wants to eat me alive. It's like, and I said, oh, you didn't mention this, you know, because she's holding the dog, and the dog is lunging and is showing his teeth, and it's snapping and all that. And I'm like, and she says, it's really fear. And I said, yeah, okay, that's fine. It hurts just as much if they bite you because it's scared. So she did eventually get to know me. Everything was fine. She is very, very, very frightened. The dog is afraid of everything. But it is amazing. It turned out that she doesn't have very many guests, so she didn't know the dog was going to do this when somebody came over, but it definitely
did.
So
when you said to do something else, like a behavior when they see something, what's behavior
mean? Oh, well, in the case of the Border Collie, well, here's a really minor form of this. Aspen has a tendency sometimes to, when she sees another dog coming, to do a barky charge. She's going to stop about 5 feet away and start going, hey, that was fun, right? But she does this charge, and I don't like the charge. So when I see, if we're in a place where there's a lot of dogs, she never does it. You know, it's only when you only see a dog every, you know, 15, 20 seconds or something. So what I'll do is I will see somebody coming, and I'll say Aspen, and I'll just flick a treat behind me, so she has to run behind me. And Aspen, you know that Aspen loves treats, right? So she'll spend 15 minutes looking for that treat that's over there. And by the time she's found the treat, I'm already up next to the dog, there's no issue. So that's a DRI. That's a differential reinforcement of an incompatible behavior. It's a nice new scientific term for you. The DRI. So if you take learning theory, we talk about DRIs and DROs and DREs and all that, but essentially you're reinforcing another behavior. And that's really important.
Differential reinforcement.
Of an incompatible behavior.
So like my dog eats skateboarders.
Oh. Yeah, so
she, and my shop is on a perfect place for skateboarders to go zooming by. There's a hill. So we just taught her to come to us for a treat.
And that's a DRI. So you could actually teach her something that also has a burst of energy. So the come probably does, but maybe it's a come and a find or something like that. Because in a case of skateboarders, if it's possible, if you can match the energy to help her move the direction in which she's going, that's a really good thing. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to most extent, when you're training a dog, what you try to do is keep your energy at the level that you want the dog's energy to be. So if your dog is going ballistic, you try to be extremely calm. I do this with people. I get people who get really excited, you know, when they're working with their dog, and I just get calmer and calmer and calmer until I feel like I'm sludge. You know, I'm so damn calm. And I'm not naturally a particularly calm person. But I do that. You do this with dogs, and what'll happen is over a period of time, the dog will start calming down too, you know. So you kind of just really drop the dog's energy level down. But when you're doing a DRI, you often don't. You actually just redirect that energy. Let's take that energy and put it someplace else. And then you might calm them down after that. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I did talk last... Did I talk last week about non-contingent reinforcement, since we're on the whole idea of reinforcement? Non-contingent reinforcement is something I use on walks all the time, and you might want to do it, particularly if you walk your dog off-leash. Non-contingent reinforcement is something for nothing. It's what, this because there's no contingency. They don't have to do anything for it. So essentially, it is what you want the dog to do. You don't have anything you want the dog to do. So it's used a lot for kids, rowdy kids in classrooms. Because if you pay attention to the kid in the classroom for being rowdy, then they're getting attention for being rowdy. And if you try to wait until they're good, sometimes they're never good, so you can't reinforce them for being good. That makes sense?
Yeah,
because they're just naughty kids. Or they've got too much energy or whatever. So you do the same thing with dogs. So if I'm working with a leash reactive dog, obviously you want to be able to reinforce good behavior when there's another dog in sight. That's obvious, you know, it's an evident thing that you want to be able to do. However, in order to get to that state, you have to the dog has to get a lot of reinforcements. The dog has to know that being close to you is really nice, that being close to you is important, that he needs you, that he loves you, and that you provide all the good stuff in life. So what I do on our walks, because I walk three dogs off leash all the time, is I constantly am just kind of giving them treats. Not constantly, they don't know when it's gonna happen. But I'll just give them a treat for nothing, you know, for absolutely nothing. But there are some somethings that they have to be getting it for. And that those things would be, they can't be wandering off. They can't be doing something I don't want them to. So they have to be doing something I like, but have not asked for. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So now what we've got is I've got three dogs who will go flutter off and find something to investigate, and then they trot up and they just get a get a treat just kind of for being in proximity. Now I also will want them to do other things, so they have to do lots of tricks and whatnot. But non-contingent reinforcement is just really simple and easy, and it's what we do for our dogs all the time for no good reason whatsoever, when we probably shouldn't. We pet our dogs when we shouldn't. We pet our dogs when they come up to demand attention. And we go, do you want attention, my little pumpkin? And so then they go that's a behavior that works, right? So if you were going to use non-contingent reinforcement in a home environment, it would be the dog is very quiet and calm, and you might go and just touch him a little bit and pet him a little bit, and then you let him go. But it is hard. Because if you have a demanding dog, that touch will go, that make them go, oh, you're going to pay attention to me? And they want to come back to you for that attention. So you do have to be careful with it. But on walks, it's pretty easy to do. So does that make sense? I use it all the time, and I was on a walk with a friend this morning, and I meet them up. And they're the ones that Flocka thinks that just loves to pieces. And so she was at one of the people was said, well, when she walks her dog, she has a little healer, alone, he goes off and then he won't come, which is really unusual for healers. Normally they are with you like glue. So, but she says he'll go off and he wants to eat. He's very hungry all the time. So he wants to eat poop. Yeah. So he wants to, and when my dogs are with them and the dogs start to eat some horse poop, both of these women go, no, no, don't do that, no, no, no. And I just go, come on, guys. And they drop their poop and come. And they go, oh, yeah, you're a master trainer. No, I just don't tell the dogs how valuable that poop is. You know, if you go, no, no, you can't have it, get it out of your mouth. The dog goes, well, I better eat it fast. I don't use leave it.
I don't either. Because
not very often. Yeah, I mean, I teach it. They all know it.
But it comes out, like, when I say it, it tends to come out aggressive. Like, even
it. It always says. It always sounds mean.
So I'm always like, leave it! But it's really, so I try and just do the
You can't go, leave it! Yeah. Yeah, and leave it is it. Yeah, I will use it for something as dreadful, like a snake.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because then I wanted to stop. But other than that, if the dog has a piece of stuff in their mouth, first of all, it's probably not going to hurt them even if they eat it.
Right.
But secondly, if you make a noise that is a startle noise, then what happens is, just think about it, if I yelled at you, your stomach clenches, right? And whatever you're doing, everything tenses up. So if you've got something in your mouth, it gets more so. So it's so much better just to be kind of light and frothy about the whole thing. Anyway, so the healer, I was talking about non-contingent reinforcement, and she's like, oh my God, that sounds so good, great. And I'm like, well, just try it and see what happens. Because she's got this dog that goes off, and I said, do not say leave it to your dog. Try that for a week. Just when he's going off, you can keep on moving, and then if he catches up to you and he's in your vicinity, just drop a treat on the ground. There it is, you know, manna from heaven. You get this. This is really nice. And just see what you get. And I bet you he's a nice little dog. He's really a nice little dog. He's one of the smallest healers I've ever seen. He's like a mini healer. No, she's madly in love with this dog, you know. So I hope we got everybody from the... Yeah.
I have a
had a dog that's very leash aggressive. Is it possible to teach him not to be like that? I've been working with him for probably 5 years.
What have you been doing?
I tell him that when he starts to get aggressive, he has to go after the dog. He's perfectly fine off leash. However, on that leash, he's
What would he do if you let him go?
He would be fine.
Yeah, okay. So don't call it leash aggressive. Call it leash reactive.
Okay.
Because it just, it isn't really aggression. There are some dogs that if you let them go, they'll attack the other dog.
Yeah.
And that's true aggression, but you have what is more common.
Right.
And yes, you absolutely can work with it, and you can help the dog with it. But most of the time, when we say no, the dog isn't listening to us anyway. And as far as they're concerned, where is he looking when he's doing that? At the other dog, right? And you're yelling no, and you're somewhere up here, and they're down there. So for all we know, he may think that you're barking with him. It doesn't work to say no. So what you probably are going to want to do is, guess what, a DRI. But there are a lot of different techniques, and what I figured is, like, next week, I want to do a lot of this Q&A about behavior problems. And what to do about behavior problems. So, and maybe some exercises and stuff like that as well. So if we can save that till next week, we may be able to put quite a bit of effort into doing it. Okay? So this week here, we're going to be doing a lot of video because this is all body language. And now I'm going to go and do my quick act. And do you want to go turn off that light? We missed you last week. Okay, so we're going to talk about play and greetings a little bit more than we did last week. Play is has been controversial forever. People are like, why do dogs play? Well, why do children play? They both play for the same reason. First of all, it's a really good way to actually kind of solidify social ties, isn't it? I mean, if two dogs play with each other, if you have a home with more than one dog and the two dogs play with each other, then they have a social tie that will probably prevent them from having really serious arguments. So that's a very important part of play. But also, it's a way for a dog to learn good manners. Mom starts off teaching them good manners, but unless they continue to do some play, they don't learn. So play mimics normal behavior. It is not normal behavior because it is what's called, there's an actual term for it, but it's non-congruent. So a dog might do a play bow with their paws up in front, which is actually a stalk, as we talked about. So they'll do a play bow, and then suddenly they'll do a spin. And then they'll start to attack another dog's back of his neck, and then they'll flip around and flip over on their back. So these are all the behaviors are behaviors that could be serious under other contexts. But because it's taken out of context, it's play. Good play, the energy level is fairly consistent. Whether it's high-level play, where there are some dogs who just go blasting each other all over the place, or low-level play. But the energy level is consistent between the two partners. Three partners in play is usually problematic. You can do it, but it's not very sustainable. In a dog park, if you have three dogs playing, eventually one dog will peel off or one dog will start getting snarky or whatever. Two dogs usually play better. The other thing about play is that both dogs are going to keep coming back for more. So you don't have one dog, and dog training classes, if they would notice this a little bit more, it'd be great. In puppy classes, because if two puppies are playing and one might squeal and run away, if it comes back for more, you're probably going to be okay. But if they don't come back for more, if they go underneath a table or a chair, then, you know, maybe that particular session should be stopped because that's not going to work out very well. One dog is not always on top, because if one dog is always on top, then the dog on the bottom is getting bullied. And he's learning to be bullied, and the other dog is learning to bully, and both of those things are not appropriate. And I'll have some video of that kind of thing in a bit, too. Most dogs, not all, but most dogs, do a lot of freezing in the middle of play. So they'll be playing and you get a freeze. And they play and then they get a freeze. And they play and they get a freeze. And I think of this particular thing as being the play freeze thing, as being kind of like mini timeouts. Were you on the Richmond Bridge? Yeah.
I emailed you.
Yeah, yeah, I did. I got it. Yeah.
Stand
still. Yeah, it's awful. I'm sorry about that. It's not my fault, I know, but I'm so sorry.
I actually listened to you the whole time. So class.
Oh my God. What a horrible thing. Anyway, so there you get these freezes, which are kind of like saying, are we still playing? Yes, we're still playing. Are we still playing? Yes, we're still playing. But some breeds and breed types do not freeze. And if one breed, a dog that has a lot of freezes in their play style meets a dog that doesn't have any freezes at all, you'll get miscommunication. And then you actually get a lot of, you can get fights out of it because they just are not communicating with one another. There are lots of types of play. There's bully play, there's polite play. Polite play, I feel like, is where there's a lot of freezes. They don't do a whole lot of touching. And when they do, they back up really quickly. So mostly think in terms of the herding breeds, the Border Collies, Belgian Tervurens, Aussies, dogs like that often have this kind of touch-me-not play where they go in, they might do a little bit of bumping or whatever, and then they come back out again.
I always wonder if it's sneezing a lot, if it's getting too intense, the dog might stop and like sneeze.
They sneeze. The sneezing is actually, at least in my view, is caught because they'll start to smile, grin, or raise their teeth, and that causes them to get their nose to get kind of irritated, and then they sneeze. So if you actually will see sneezing happen when a dog is snarling at another dog, really in nasty, snarl, snarl, sneeze, you know, because their nose is getting all caught up there. So consistent play partners, that is play partners who play with the same dog all the time, they will start adjusting their play. So Luke can adjust to the puppies, and even though he's a bully type player, he can adjust to the puppies. So the more that they see each other, the more likely they are to get along well, as long as they are good with each other. Yeah?
When you say bully type player, you mean bully dog breed? Or
bully dog breeds.
Or being a bully?
Well, they're both, but definitely, and I've got video of both in here. That's why I have this thing, because I put a lot of videos in here, but there may be some more that I've got. It would be, you know, 8 hours down the road and we'd still be playing play videos, so, you know. And by the way, if you have any good play videos, send them to me because I always like them. Okay, so included in play are something called fixed action patterns. And fixed action patterns, I think we talked about in the very, very beginning. A fixed action pattern is something that a dog wants to start off with, but then it's finished by a trigger in the brain. So what we see this most with in dogs, certainly youngsters, is the mounting behavior. So you'll see a dog suddenly start to mount another dog, and then all of a sudden they're mounting the dog and they can't seem to stop on their own, and you almost have to pull them off. So that's a fixed action pattern, and standover is a fixed action pattern, and there are others as well. You see it most often in puppies, but it also occurs particularly in adolescent dogs, but even in adult dogs if you don't stop it. This is one reason why I always discourage mounting behavior, because it is a fixed action pattern, so as such, it's addictive. There, if a dog starts doing mounting behaviors on another dog, it must feel really good. I'm sure it just floods the brain with dopamine. And so they don't want to stop it. You know, so the next time they see that same dog, they'll try to mount it again. Aspen does it with one particular toy. So we take that toy away from her. And as you can see, it's not only male dogs, it's also female dogs. Okay, so this is, you're going to see some fixed action patterns here. I don't think I played this video for you. These are two dogs. It's a pit bull and a pit lab mix. This was at the Marine Humane Society a long time ago. And the pit is not a good dog. I mean, you know, you can see that it's got some bad problems that are going to happen as it becomes an adult. But pay particular attention to the fixed action patterns as he does a standover and see what happens. He can't figure out how to get out of it. He can't figure out what he's doing. So his brain is caught on a loop kind of thing. So you'll see that in the fixed action pattern.
So there's
Oh, that was one right there. Did you see that? Did you see that? Hang on a second. So what happened here is they touched the backs of their rumps, and you saw that they did this pause and both of their tails went up. Did you see that? And we're going to see it again. Oh, I did. It didn't go back far enough. Here we go, right there. They just did like that.
Oh.
That's normal puppy play there. But look at this pit. These are all really good play postures. And here's one, right here. He just hit a standover. He's gonna get there, and he's not, or she, not gonna know what the heck is going on. You can actually see it in her face. What's happening? Why am I over here? Remember that standover last week? With the German Shepherd? There's another one.
Same thing.
And there's the third. Okay? So these things, is that dog aggressive? No. He's just operating out of a series of instincts that cause him to do that. So there may be a particular touch that does it, or just a particular feeling in his own body that causes him to actually go into this process. And it makes sense when you think about how fast dogs grow up. You know, you could never see a five-month-old baby would never do anything like that, but it takes us, you know, 13, 14 years before we actually start to become sexually mature. It takes them 6 months. So, you know, there's all these behaviors that are just in there that come out if you allow them to come out. So what would I do with this puppy? I would only have this puppy play with adult dogs. Ever. Because he has a tendency to go into arousal and then to go over the top. But if he played with an adult dog, it was going to be really different. Okay?
Do you break his?
Hmm?
Do you break him?
You know, I might do that, but the chances are in this case, his arousal level wasn't too high.
Oh, I see.
Okay? It was just that he's a victim of his own. When he feels something is smaller than him or his own size, he actually does this. Anybody here had a dog that likes to pick on small dogs but not big dogs? It happens quite often. That is because of size differential. Size does matter. So you have to be very careful about what your dog is allowed to do. Well, you certainly aren't going to want to put him in with an older dog that picks on puppies.
No, but I mean, what about your older dog? Next week.
Oh, okay. So here's some freezes. This is my old dog Strider with probably a hybrid named Sirius. And they do quite a few freezes. This is actually fairly normal adult dog play because they play for a little bit of time and then they just kind of go, okay, that was enough. They don't play for very long, but it's really nice play. So you get a series of freezes. The other thing that these two dogs do that I really like is they kind of hit each other on their muzzle as a way to continue to invite each other to play. All the moves here are not smooth. All the moves are like, and that's another one of those things about play, particularly in more of the herding dog type and the northern dog type than it would be of the bully dog type. So that, see the little chit hit?
Yeah.
And look at the ears.
Thank you.
Yeah, the hybrid's younger, but Strider's game. So they do a lot of muzzle hitting. I don't know what you might call that. So then they go, was that enough for the video? That looked good for you guys? So so you saw those little cut muzzle taps and whatnot? I, you know, this is what adult dogs will do. There's also Sirius did try to put his paw over. So that's a dominance move, and Strider in a very flirtatious way. Remember I said the freeze flight tend befriend? Did we talk about that? So that's his tend befriend. Like, oh, bud, don't do that. I don't like that. But let's do this. You know? So it was just that very beginning of a paw over the back that caused that. At no time did their tails drop, their hackles go up, or their ears do anything that looked like they were going to be threatened. So this was all really, really good play. Yeah? And again, they're adult dogs, so that they don't play for too long. Now, if they lived together, they probably would play for a lot longer. But this was the very first time they met. So in a funny way, it was almost like, how do you do? And, well, we could go for a drink sometime. And that's kind of how it was for these guys. Now, this is Flocka and Heather playing. There's more mouth play in this, but you will see a lot of freezes in this. This was towards, now their play is a lot rougher. This was kind of towards the beginning of the relationship, and they were just kind of trying to get to know each other. But, so again, that's one of the reasons why you'll see more freezes than you see now. Because now they have a relationship that's a really good relationship, so they don't freeze as often. They still do it, just not as often. Freeze. 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 Long freeze. Aspen's coming in to see who's going to be allowed to do this. I don't know. We could count the freezes, but I think I'm up to 20 now, you know. Because I think one of the most important things to remember that's a great freeze. And again, now that it gets slower and slower, you know, they have fewer and fewer now than they did then.
Is the paw on the eye, is that just she had an itch?
I think she just had an itch. So I think one of the most important things, considerations with regard to play, is that the dogs are vulnerable when they're playing. So I think that's one of the big reasons why they do so much freezing, is it continually tells the dog, are you okay? I'm okay. Are you okay? Am I okay? You know, they're constantly telling that to, or asking each other that. Because, you know, when they flip over, that's very vulnerable. Or when they lie down. Anybody here ever had a problem getting your dog to lie down on cue? Yes, many people have. It's very normal. The dog doesn't want to lie down on cue. And that's because the lying down is vulnerable. If you were walking down the middle of a street in San Francisco and you just decided you wanted to lie down, you know, it would be, or somebody told you, that would probably be more like it. Somebody told you to lie down. You wouldn't do it because lying down makes you very vulnerable. So that's the same thing with these guys. So when they're playing, they're constantly saying, I know you're vulnerable, but I'm good with that and we're okay. Yeah.
Is Flop with a 2 hour?
Yeah.
It looks to me like she's not engaged as much. I mean, she's not wagging her tail.
She's a little bit more worried.
Is she? Okay.
Yeah. But she's, and you ought to see her now.
Okay.
Now she's like up on top of something. She launches at Heather. So this was probably one of their first real play periods when we first got Heather.
Okay.
if I can find one, they usually, right when I get to go for a walk, they both start going crazy playing with each other. It's very nice having dogs that play with each other. It's a lot of fun.
What about if you had a young adult dog that doesn't freak, that just is, you know, has the puppy frenetic energy of play? I guess it's just having dogs that will put boundaries.
Yeah, you need to make sure that they're with another dog that can handle that. Because it's all so quick that it's very difficult for us to get involved. Now, if you want to get involved in something like when your dogs are playing and you think your dog's maybe going overboard in the play stuff, you can do it. And the best way to do it is to involve yourself in it. So if the two dogs are playing here, you know, you kind of just follow them. It's like you're just right on top of them. The problem is that what happens in most cases is the dogs get nervous because there's this person looming over them and they stop playing. But many times they don't stop playing. They'll just keep looking at you every once in a while. And part of their freeze is to look at you. Yeah? So that is,
Do you reinforce that?
Pardon?
Do you reinforce that?
No, I don't think I do. Well, I suppose you could. But I'm trying to get them to concentrate on each other and to be good with each other. So usually I'll just use my presence. As opposed to I don't want them to be looking to me for approval. I want them just to tone down their behavior a little bit.
So you just use that as kind of a natural
break. Yeah, so it's just kind of right there. Just mom is right here, so don't act out.
So do you teach break at all?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right,
the way I teach interrupt cue is a little bit like that.
Okay.
What I do is I'll, you know, if they're break or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
When dogs are playing at a normal, natural level, not a high level, at a natural level, I'll tell them enough in my case. And when you do this, the dogs are playing, right? So you say enough, you walk through the dogs. Okay, you walk through them, come out the other end, have them both sit, give them a treat, and then say go play. And the reason you're walking through them, if you've got two really nice dogs, you can just have them come to you. But a lot of times they get into this, you know, this rowdy stuff, and walking through them gives them something to look at, to orient towards. And for dogs that have big issues this way, I don't just have them walk through the dogs. I have them walk through the dogs, go into the kitchen, sit at the, you know, have them both sit at the kitchen counter and count to 10 before you give them a treat, because I really want them to calm down. But for just plain interrupts, you know, it's just that really quick one. You know, I really like quick behavior interruptions or modifier or whatever, followed by slow reward. And the reason I like that is particularly with high level issues, you know, that energy. I want to calm them down before I let them go back to doing what they were doing before. That makes sense?
Yeah, we have puppy social scene. It's play for beginning puppy. And I just am curious because the few instructors that I've worked with all teach it differently. So that's why I was kind of wondering a lot of them will say, like, you know, you break if when you see the arousal starting to climb.
Well, what you should be doing, and I doubt that they do it, but what you should be doing is all the owners should be in there with the puppies.
Oh, they are. I mean, that doesn't mean that they're, like, engaged.
But are they walking around? They should be walking around so the puppies keep an eye on them.
Right.
So the puppies are going to kind of watch on their owner. They play, but they watch their owner, and then they call them. You can do a break or you can do a recall and bring the dogs back. Honestly, the best puppy classes are with, I've got some video. If we have time, maybe this week or next week, I'll show you some video. But the best ones are where you have two adult dogs, because they will keep the play at the best level, you know. Strider would just walk around in there and all the dogs would go, oh. You big German Shepherd. But it's hard to have, you know, everybody doesn't have dogs that are good with other dogs, you know, unfortunately, and that includes trainers. Okay, so this is back to this is adult dog tense play. This is with fixed action patterns. You can watch the same things that we probably could have put it right after the puppy video, but you can watch the same behaviors with when they touch each other, or particularly when Luke touches Boo. He actually goes into a state of arousal. His tail goes up, his hackles go up. He's ready to go, and he's going to rumble. And this is with Boo, our old Aussie. Now, one of the interesting things that happens with this one is our interrupt cue. I think we said go get a toy, and they go get a toy, and you can watch the energy level drop back down again. Boo and Luke had something of a love-hate relationship for a while before, you know, when Luke became an adult, but they never had an issue. So you can see his hackles are starting to go up, and Boo is just, he's just a player. But there he hit him, and then look at this. Does it curve? Look at his hackles. And look how tense he is. And Boo's not tense at all. Boo is actually, right now, he's trying to diffuse it. And then Luke diffuses his own tension by rolling around so he can get his hackles back down. And then they go and get a toy. And if you get a toy, that means that it's a lot more fun. So Luke always had an interesting thing that if Luke was playing and was doing the zoomies, anybody here have a dog do the zoomies? Yeah, when you called him back or when he was on his way back, he would find Boo on the way back and run right into him, and then keep going. He just had that small amount of tension with Boo, and you could always see that happening. But that whole get a toy thing, there was another video I was just thinking about getting, and now I can't. And as I said, Luke, you know, he doesn't like other dogs, so he did this fine with them. But here he is playing with, this is not Flocka, I don't think. Yes, it is Flocka. But look how he adjusts in the way he plays with Flocka. That's what I say, you know, go to the shelter, get a pit bull, get a chihuahua for free. Get a chihuahua, get a pit bull for free, you know. Luke is probably Akita, pit bull, blah, blah, blah. So now we get different types of dogs playing. This is a pit bull playing with Strider, and Strider is, he's just confused. Because the way a lot of pit bulls play, not all of them by any means, but a lot of pit bulls is very fluid. They don't do all those freezes that we saw before with the other two. They don't do all those freezes. It's as though it's genetically not part of their programming. And so this can be confusing to a dog like Strider, who doesn't know quite what to do with somebody who's not freezing and saying, is everything okay, is everything okay? So he gets just a little bit nervous here.
Poor Strayer's gonna say, I'm done. He did? Mm-hmm. Strider did?
Oh, no,
Strider and my dog did. Also, this is a very young dog.
Uh-oh.
I think he loved his job. So now he's going to try to play. So what he's doing now is called going shopping. Because he's like, I don't know what to do with this dog, so I'm going to ignore the dog. I'm just going to go and do something completely differently. And I want to show this one that it's not in here, so I'm just going to find it. Which is Strider playing with a different kind of dog. Okay. Come on, just play. It's just play. There it is. Okay, so this is a little dog named Chance. And this, the reason I thought this would be interesting for you guys is because you can see that at the very beginning, Strider is confused, Chance isn't confused. Oh, and by the way, this is some leash reactivity here. But towards the end, they start to kind of understand each other a little bit better.
Okay.
And red, isn't it?
Good at distinguishing.
This is not a shy little dog.
Yeah, he's good at distinguishing.
He's ready.
Now, beautiful greeting right here. Did you see the stride of
his ready.
He's literally saying, I'm not afraid. So don't worry about it. And then he's going to try to play. This is hard. Mom, what am I supposed to be doing here?
Go ahead. It's okay. You can play. Come on. Go ahead. It's okay. You can play.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay.
Come on. Come on. You can play. Come on. Sometimes, yeah. And it's not necessarily good because you can get prey drive
yeah.
that kicks in there, and when that happens, you know, it's really icky.
Yeah.
Are you guys okay over there? Do you want to move your way into the, are you all right? Everything's good? Okay. I'm sorry.
So my 9-pound dog is like that old dog. He lunges when he's overwhelmed. He starts screaming at the big dog and jumping in the face.
But is he doing it in play?
A little bit of both. Like he'll be like, you're overwhelming me. And then he'll start playing, do the zoomies again, like play with me. But he'll kind of break it up himself.
Yeah, it's as though they're trying to, they seem to be trying to mitigate the other dog's behavior, but they don't know how to do it very well. I mean, we have to understand that dogs are no more perfect than people are. They're going to have some miscommunication here and there. It's just going to happen.
Four straight.
Okay, so this is a Malinois. This was taken by one of my students. This is the Malinois who is learning how to bully other dogs. And I have a follow-up video to this in a minute, too. But you can actually watch this dog bullying and learning how to bully, and you can figure out when you would want to interrupt this behavior, you know, as opposed to when they want to necessarily. Can you see it okay? So this lab, I think it's a lab, really only wants to play with this ball. Yep. And the Malinois just wants to bully and to dominate. This is not appropriate for the Malinois. I would not be allowing my dog to do this with another dog. Because it's just not fair on the lab who's only trying to play, or only trying to play ball. And who just keeps on trying to flip over and be submissive and say, okay, leave me alone. Because I don't know that that dog really knows what the Malinois is actually even doing. It's not your eyes, it went out of focus. In my opinion, the owner should probably have been putting the Malinois on leash. Because he's learning bad things, and so is the lab. What is the lab learning in a case like this? That he can't trust other dogs, right? That his owner is not going to take care of him. And man, that's a big one. That the owner is not going to take care of me when push comes to shove. So he or she, I think it was a she, may very well learn to start snarking at other dogs because she doesn't trust her owner to do it.
She has to take care of herself.
Yeah, she has to take care of herself. This is one of the biggest issues with dog parks, is that the dogs learn that they cannot, that they can't count on their owner. So, okay, so then this is, at the same time, the dog now is going to learn who he or she cannot bully. And you can really watch the difference in the way that this doodle actually handles this whole situation.
This is the same Malinois.
This is the same Malinois. This is just a little bit later. Now she's going to tell him you can't do this.
Buddy is always telling Colin.
She just growled at him. So look at her stance. He got worried, didn't he? Did you see him do a tongue flick?
Sorry.
No, this is great. And it's close up too, which is great.
So she did. She's really good at doing attention moves, which I'll talk about in a second. Key. And the Malinois is going to leave him alone now, because he has successfully driven him off. So this move, this kind of thing where they go like this, just a direct stare with their mouth closed, that is a warn off So if another dog does it to your dog, you can actually really see it happen. And it apparently carries a lot of weight. So watch her do it. I think him do it here now, maybe. He does it here.
Yeah.
I think he's still doing it.
Yeah.
So he is not looking away. He's looking at the dog. But you can see the difference with the mouth open. See, the mouth open is looking friendly, but when that mouth closes, is an intention movement, so I'm gonna get you. And the Malinois, bless his little heart, listened. So he probably is fine for him to have played with this dog, although one hopes that they got permission from the doodle's owner, because the doodle also just wanted to play ball. And the Malinois is looking for things to do because Malinois look for things to do. They also are dogs that are pretty ball-focused themselves. They can be dramatically ball-focused. This is unwelcome attention at a dog park. This is nice for body language because you really see the dog trying to do a turn away. I want to go all the way away. And the pit mix is like, oh, no, but I really want to pay attention to you. I really want to play with you. It's very short. So the golden is trying to be as nice as possible to the other dog. The other thing that's happening here is that if the golden was on the ground, the bully might have gone, kept on going. But the height matters. So if the bully is up on a chair, then the other dog is up on a chair, then she has more power, or he has more power over the bully dog. Okay, it's more unwelcome attention. This is, again, the same kind of thing. And we see this all the time, right? A dog trying to play ball or with a stick, and another dog wants to play with him. Now, sometimes they do want to share sticks, but in this case, this dog does not. So he is, remember I was talking about the intention movement with the mouth closed? Can you see how ineffective his is? Because where is it? Come back over here. Because he's looking slightly away. He can't really go commit to the whole thing. So the other dog just keeps on bugging him. Yeah?
So my dog is 99.9% on the receiving end of this behavior from other dogs. When that kind of stopped taking him to the one part that dogs do this at, but if you just kind of whistle and walk in a different direction and my dog will catch up to me and we'll just keep going.
That's the right thing to do. Yeah, that's absolutely the right thing to do. Because if you try to stop it, you know, we're just bumbling idiots when it comes to dog body language. So it's really good if we, you know, if you can see some of these overt things. The time to interrupt is if your dog or another dog looks very frightened. Because if a dog gets frightened, then what happens is a lot of times that kicks the other dog into prey drive. And you ever wonder why dogs go for screaming dogs? You know, if there's a dog that's screaming, all the other dogs will go right for it. And that's prey drive. If it were a deer, they'd all be ripping it up. Yeah?
Is that what happens when one dog gets in prey with another dog? It kicks in prey drive from the other dogs and they start going
along? You know, I couldn't hear you. I've got this noise over here.
No, that's fine. I can speak up. So is that what happens when two dogs getting in a fight, that it
kicks
greater than the other dogs? Because I've noticed that happens.
And all the other dogs are it happens in our species as well. If two kids get into a fight on the playground, all the other kids come over. But it's kind of interest, it's something novel, it's something happening, so that is interesting to them. But it's also that in the case of dogs, you've got prey drive, and if blood is drawn, and if there's, you know, and then you get high, really high levels of screaming and whatnot, then you actually, it's really hard to stop it. You've all heard of people getting killed by their dogs,
Oh, I had the dog, you know, like the one in the East Bay where the dogs killed a youngster, and they had had the dog for a couple of years. There'd never been any kind of problem, or at least they'd said there wasn't. I always think they haven't seen warning signs, that there's been something they just haven't seen. But once that first, I mean, you know, that whole bloodlust thing that they always used to talk about, that occurs. So once it starts going, it's really hard for them to stop it. We have to remember that these are animals that are supposed to kill other animals with their teeth. They don't have a gun to do it with or anything. They are supposed to do that. So there are a lot of mechanisms within the dog, him or herself, that once clicked on, like a fixed action pattern, they can't take it back out again. They can't turn it off. So, you know, the dog that goes after a small dog or goes after, you know, puppies or whatever, you have to stop that because it's not something that'll stop on its own at all. You know, they're not going to go, oh, this isn't a nice thing for me to do. Yeah?
What's a safe way for a person to get in and actually, you know, without getting bit themselves, break up?
Okay, there's very, very, the most important thing to do, I think, if you're going to go someplace where there's a bunch of dogs playing, is to wear a very loud whistle, a really loud whistle. I mean, a whistle that a ranger blew when a coyote was going after my dog, sent that coyote away and sent my dogs away too. But, you know, it was very, very loud. And it's a great thing to call for help as well, obviously. But from the point of view of startling a dog and often stopping it, it's a good idea. Then, you know, if you need to grab the dog, you would grab it on its back legs and pull up and turn a little bit, if you can do that. But if you've got two dogs going for a fight, just try to get those legs. I mean, it's impossible because they're all over the place. If you have one dog on top, grab the collar and twist, cut off the airway. Just right here, just cut it off. If you have a sweater on, throw a sweater off the dog over the dog's heads and then do that. But, you know, I've seen videos of people breaking up dog fights and everybody does a lousy job. I mean, they're just so fast. They're just going at it and they're not waiting for you to stop them.
What about a taser?
Yes, actually, and I even carry a stun gun. A little bitty stun gun. You can get it at Amazon.com. And mine is pink. But it's very tiny, and you just flip it on, and when you flick it on, it makes this horrible buzzing noise, which is enough to scare most dogs away. And then you just touch the dog, and that touching of the dog will knock the dog out for like 30 seconds.
Well, really, it'll knock the dog out.
Mm-hmm.
A bit like a
mastiff. I don't know if that it'll do a mastiff, but it will certainly confuse them enough to...
I was in a particular mastiff latched onto a melon.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't do that. I mean, I started using that after I had a client who had 5 pit bulls.
Ugh.
And they would get into knockdown, drag out, vital. And she had a really big stun gun. And it's better than a taser because you don't want to have something to aim. Besides that, tasers are illegal. But stun guns are not because you have to get right up close in order to do it. And you can get them as small as a pen.
And then you had that, you showed the other class, that break apart whistling thingy.
Oh, the brake stick.
Yeah, stick.
Yeah, the brake stick. That's for dogs that have grabbed hold and you.
Well, this is the whistle. When you pull the thing, it whistles really loud.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's
alarm.
Yeah. You just pull it and it makes this horrible noise.
And that'll do it?
Yeah, that usually big sounds will do it because that's the only sense that it's not fully engaged. So usually that'll do it, but...
You can get rescue whistles at REI or on Amazon that are for when you're hiking that can be heard for 2 to 5 hours.
And that's what you want. You want something that loud.
But if you blow it without anything in your ears, you can actually damage your own ears.
Well, I like this one because if you're freaking out and can't breathe or screaming, you just pull it.
You just pull it.
And it'd go, I have it on my dog.
Yeah, I mean, I carry a backpack, and in my backpack, I have my stun gun, I have some citronella spray, and then I have the whistle, and I used to carry an air horn, but I decided that was a little bit much, and I've never had to use any of them. But I figure if I didn't carry them, I'd probably have had to use them.
We've had to use the stun gun.
You've had to use the stun gun?
It's nice because we know now what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We had a little Mexican street dog that we could rescue. I love her so much. And she had been playing with a pity, and they were doing great. And then she started running, and the pit bull couldn't catch her, and he started chasing her and whining.
Oh, that horrible, that keening noise?
Yeah, and we were just like, if he catches her, if she trips, we lose her. She's gone. And she ran up, and she jumped into my husband's arms, and he pulled out the shocker and shot the pity in the chest. And it was adorable. He just sat and was like, oh, yes, sir, what now? He just sat
just
down and
came back and stopped.
And he stopped and he sat and looked right at my husband, like, what would you want me to do now? And the owner was like, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I thought for sure. Yeah, and so, you know.
Yeah, well, that's really good.
Yeah.
Because I know that with some dogs, it can actually knock them out. I really, you know, I worry more about coyotes where I walk than anything else because I figure that if they grab Heather, it's okay. She's going to be too heavy. And they'll just, God, no, I got to have another dog. But Flocka is 12 pounds, you know, and so is Aspen, although they'd get Aspen on the hair. Like, where? Dog? Is there a dog in here? So, yeah. Okay, so now you have your little toolkits.
Yeah.
Actually, at MHS several years ago, there was an incident which caused me to really start thinking about this. What happened was a dog, it was a pit bull, but it was in a car, and the people had left the windows that far open. And the dog got out, jumped out when it saw a little chihuahua being walked by one of our volunteers. So it was a shelter dog. And the dog came and just grabbed this dog. And so the volunteer was pulling back this way, and the pity was pulling this way, and it essentially degloved the dog. And everybody started screaming. Everybody. I wasn't there. I mean, I was in my office, and I heard the screaming, but actually, my assistant came running back in going, you gotta get out there, because there's something, you know, this going on. And there was an officer there who's no longer there, but she was screaming too. And I'm like, why are we all screaming? So I went up to her and I went, you stop it! And the dog went, oops! And he stopped. So yelling at the dog actually worked in that case. And by the way, the little dog was okay. We kind of put it back together again, and he was just a little shit just like he'd been before. I'm sure that it did have some kind of impact on him. But after that, we decided, okay, we have to have kits, breakup dog kits. So we actually, I don't know if they still have them in the pavilion, but we made up a kit in the pavilion. We put one in the back. We put them in a variety of different places because it was really necessary to try to make sure that we could, including a big like navy blanket. To cover the, because if you take off, turn off the lights, it really helps a lot. And that's one way to do that.
What if he had locked his jaw, like your yell didn't stand up with
you? Pardon?
That pity, if he had been locked on, that.
I did not have my brake stick on, yeah. So I probably would have ended up having to go back in and get a brake stick and bring it back out again and do
would
it.
Would you keep that in that little bag too? Or?
Yeah, well, I don't in my bag now because I don't worry about that where I am, but I would have it would in certain areas. I definitely would.
So has anybody seen a break stick used? Are you like sitting there like?
Yeah,
okay.
No, you're like you just jam it. It really is jammed.
It's
where the hole is, you know, when they're and then you just twist. So it looks like the shaft of a hammer. Is what it looks like because it's really thin and then it goes up a little bit, and they use it in dog fighting all the time because it breaks up fights, but it's no good for dogs that slash and run. It's only good for dogs that hold, right? Because they're the bully type dogs hold. That's what they do. So they're so that's the kind of thing that you would do for that. And I tell you honestly. You probably never have to use it. I know you used it, but in most cases, I think I had one client in, I think she was in Oakland, and her little dog had gotten attacked and very badly injured, and she was afraid to go out the door. She was just afraid to go for walks now, and you know, that's such a shame. Okay, so this is a really interesting, this is why you don't have toys at dog parks, This is an interesting, this is from the body language point of view. You're going to see what dogs do when they have something that belongs to them, right?
So no toys at golf?
Pardon?
No toys at golf?
You should, only balls if the dogs are away from each other or whatever. But, you know, daycares don't have toys for a reason, because they fight over them. So this is a dog park. This dog has got something. And another dog is actually going to take it away from him, which is pretty amazing. The camera that was used here goes back and forth on picture. Yeah. So this dog is using the toy as a play, you know, please play tug with me. Both of these dogs are in arousal. Can you see that? They both got their hackles up. That doesn't mean they're aggressive. It just means that they're highly excited.
Hi.
Well, they're actually good.
Oh, hi.
They're calming themselves. So this is going to be, this dog is very, shake it off. Remember the white dog? This is how. All of a sudden, it's mine. So it was actually a really nice takeaway. So these dogs are using this as a toy. But then there's this, which is how not to take a ball or how not to take a toy. So we have, that dog was doing a lot of high level play. So he was not, or she was not covering the ball. She was actually dancing with the ball and trying to offer the ball to the other dog. And you know, and so it was an item for them to play with. This is not so much an item to play with. This is a ball that belongs to the white dog, and the brown dog would like to take it. He's teasing with it, yeah. So I would say the pit bull mix is probably really thinking happy thoughts, right? But not so much the Akita mix. That is such a good posture for don't come over. And you saw all the other dogs coming over.
So, everyone's experience and the people who were the owners of the pit bull equivalent who was trying to take the ball then accused my dog who was protecting the ball of being aggressive.
Well, you.
Is it
I don't talk about stuff like that. I would say that most people really don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And almost everybody. Okay, so you're walking down, you know, you're doing something. I'm trying to think of an example. You're driving your car and you make a turn and you realize you just almost missed somebody. All right, and so you feel awful, but their first tendency is to try to figure out a way to blame that other person. That's the very first thing you do. It's like it happens in seminars all the time when people will be, you know, I'll be talking and someone will challenge something, and my first thing is to want to go right back at them. And I have learned over time, no, they have good thoughts. We're going to take this in. We're going to think about it, and we're going to have it go back out again. But most people in dog parks, if you even begin to think that their dog was at fault, they will kick right back at you and say your dog was at fault. So discount it, because I think it's just natural human nature, you know. Yeah.
Could you play that last part back? I want to see the transition where the brown dog went from kind of playful bouncy to just teeth bare.
Well, I can tell you what I think happened is the dog went, oh, we're having that kind of fun. This dog likes to rumble. So you can actually see it. That I just love. So it was though the brown dog was just waiting for it. Is there something that I can do to start that? Huh? I think so. Yeah, it's happened before. Yeah, I have never really thought about grabbing an ear. Look at that, he grabs the ear.
You're in the side of the face in the back, and he just like suitcased the dog. He's like, you're my suitcase off.
But you can tell that that's happened before. It wasn't a shock.
Well, and he's pretty good at doing that, too.
He was really calm. He was really calm.
It lifts him up. He just lifts him right up and away. Yes, why are you at the dog park? The white dog's owner is kind of really much more worried about it. And the white dog, of course, is doing what white dog, what these dogs do. They go, yeah, yeah. And, you know, next time, you just wait till next time, I'll get you. You know. And then the white dog's owner comes in.
The white dog was still a little bit surprised by his reaction.
Oh, I think the white dog was extremely surprised. Because the white dog was going, yeah, this is mine. You can't do this.
Yeah.
And then turned around, and that in that turn, right here, you can actually see it happening. So it's here. We got. You're sniffing my butt. I don't want you to sniff my butt. This poor dog. The guy who's walking by, going, "Whoa, I'm out of there. I don't think I'm going to be doing that." Put the ball down. Do that. This is my ball. Turns around to tell him to stop sniffing.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Wow.
Don't sniff.
Ready to rumble right there.
And then go. And this guy is practiced.
Oh, yeah.
You can just see he goes, okay, this is what we do. I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
Low battery. Oh my good, I'm not plugged in.
Yeah, the
so the pity mix, that's fun for him? Or that's like pleasure?
Yes. All right. Okay. So This is that's what I used to do a whole module on bully mixes, but right now there's a cult of people, a bunch of people who think that bully mixes are just dogs who have been raised wrong. But that's not true. In just the same way as if you have a herding dog, how many of you guys have a herding dog? Do they do any things that herding dogs do? Right? They might have a tendency to herd. They might have a tendency to go in and out really fast and sniff, you know. They oftentimes are dogs that have a pretty big personal space issue. You know, they don't want to get really too close unless they really love you. So that, you know, anybody got a terrier? Terriers like to kill things. That's what they like to do. They like to kind of go, you know, I'm going to go and kill a mole or a gopher or whatever. And they are a little feisty, so sometimes they have a fairly quick temper. So I'm not sure why, and I'm probably going to get myself into trouble here, but I'm not sure why when it comes to pit bulls, we don't think that they might have some breed-specific behavior. But they do. And one of the breed-specific behaviors they have is the fact that they have been bred for hundreds of years to fight other dogs. And so what is the best way to get a dog to fight other dogs? To make them like it. So they do not get angry when they're fighting. they, it's their prey drive that kicks in. So they've, what they've done is they've really used their prey drive. And they, when they rumble, they actually have a really good time. So they get finished with the fight and they're smiling. They're enjoying the fight. Is this a good thing? No. But is it reality? Yes. So I figure, and this is just based on 35 years experience, I figure about 60% of pit bulls are probably, if they get into a rumble, they're probably going to learn that they like it. So our goal here is to never let them rumble, because we don't want them to learn they like it. It's just like if you have a Akita or whatever, you don't want them to kill something, or a terrier for that matter, because then they're going to want to continue to do it because that's what they got put on earth to do. So we go, no, 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 we'd rather you didn't do that. So with Pitties, if you think, he didn't look angry, did he?
He looked calm afterwards.
Yeah, and he was very calm afterwards because he wasn't upset. Most aggression, the vast majority is emotion. Remember we were talking about that? They get upset. But for fighting dogs, any of the fighting dogs, they're not upset. This is what they do for fun. And they also have been built so that they do not really feel pain in the moment. And so they're, you know, later on they definitely feel pain. But I mean, that's actually probably pretty true of most entities, is that if you're in the moment, you just do what you do, right? And later on you go, oh, wow, that hurt, you know? So that's why they look like they're having a good time, and that's why they want to do it some more. So that is, you know, that means that probably 40 to 45% of them do not have this gene that makes them want to do it. But there are enough that do want to do it that you have to be very careful with it. And also the other thing about bullies is that, particularly with pit bulls, is that somewhere around a year or thereabouts, they do what's called turning. So they're fine, they're happy, they're really nice puppies, and all of a sudden they get into a rumble and they go, okay, that's what I was put into fight in the world to do, and then they become dog aggressive. And these dogs are often very dog aggressive. I mean, dog aggressive. Because nature does not usually intend for conspecifics, that is, members of the same species, to actually kill each other. Apparently they skipped us because we do it all the time. But most other species don't do that. But in the case, you can override it when you're using prey drive. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did I offend anybody? They're going to leave now? Because, I mean, it just, I love the breed. I think the breed is wonderful. I just don't have my blinders on when it comes to them.
Yeah,
yes?
I love the
mouthful.
It was funny that, like, obviously, it was just like...
Turned on.
Yeah, and the whole litter, every single mouthful was the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a genetic.
She enjoyed it, and having said that, she would be fine afterwards.
Pardon?
She, like, enjoyed it, and I realized that looking back,
she was always liked it. Yeah, I mean, think of it again as not being emotional. It's not because they don't like other dogs. It's because that is what fulfills them. In just the same way as a predator, another dog might kill a rabbit. I mean, I have a friend who was a trainer, and she goes, my dog, my terrier killed little baby bunnies. And we're all like, yeah. Now, this is what happens. Yeah.
Oh, I was just thinking, my neighbor across the street had a little pit bull, gorgeous dog. I love the dog. Beautiful, gray dog. But I started watching it get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they were letting their son walk the dog. Actually, the dog was walking the son.
Of course, yeah.
And I thought, right, not good. And a couple of months, we're really going to have to watch, you know, those two. They're right across the street. And not long after, my friend had her white husky out. And thank goodness I had my bike with me. But the little boy was out with the pit, and the pit's just kind of pulling and pulling and pulling, and I was watching it, and the minute I turned to talk to her, he snapped away from his harness, and he just charged for the white husky, and they were going around and around and around, and I used my bike to block the pit, but the dog was so unfocused, it was just like laser, and there was nothing anybody was going to do to
get
in between.
Yeah,
there was so strong. It just popped away from that little boy. Like, he could have done it a long time ago. For some reason, he didn't, but that was the moment where he decided, oh, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
I don't think she's paying attention.
No,
she's kind of in her own little world.
The
Malinois
puppy video
missed
you showed us once, how happy the Malinois was.
So what are they doing with that
Now? Well, the mom came, they moved, thank goodness. I was like, lady, come get your dog! Come get your dog! And I'm screaming, like, come get your dog, because this little boy can't control it. And I'm using my bike to block the dog, and the mom finally came out and got the kid.
So they like to do their instincts.
Well, of course, in whatever nature has put us on earth to do, we like. You know, otherwise we would all die of starvation or something if we didn't like to eat. So if the way you get food is by being predatory, then well, you can look at body language.
Yeah,
I mean, you get that really straining kind of thing where they're like not even necessarily salivating. I mean, they strain and they get the frustrated keening that you spoke about. They're kind of going. That dog is going to be bad when it hit it because that's prey drive. That's frustrated prey drive. And that people will go, oh, he just wants to play because his tail is wagging. Well, no, he wants to have fun. But play and have fun are not the same thing in the case of these kinds of dogs. So you do have to be really careful with them. And, you know, and if everybody who owned one understood that they're carrying around, you know, an AK-47, a gun, you know, they would be a little bit more careful of these dogs.
I'm sorry, you were finished?
In a sec, go ahead.
What keeps them from getting into the rumbling? Like, I remember you know that I had a pit bull, and she came from someone who was breeding fighting dogs.
Right.
And she wouldn't fight.
So she actually came from, it's genetic again. It wasn't something that you did or that somebody else did that's caused her not to want to fight. It was the fact that she is, okay, so you have a litter of pointers. And out of that litter of pointers, there's going to be one or two that are really good hunters and are fantastic pointers and will point the prey for an hour and a half. And then there's going to be maybe one or two that just don't have that gene. You know, that are like, well, what am I supposed to do here? What point? What are you talking about? So that's the thing, is in maybe every litter, maybe not every litter, you will have some dogs that are just not driven. They really are not driven to do that, and those are the good ones for our purposes. Whereas the ones that that are, you know, are driven to do it are the bad ones for our purposes. For somebody else's purposes, they're good. So this was Luke, by the way. This is how Luke, who is dog reactive, would like to greet another dog. Now that's a stuffed dog.
Knocking over.
Yeah, but I mean, this was when he was young, and this was right after he turned icky. Could you see the intention there? He's actually not thinking he doesn't like that dog. He's going, dog, boom. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. He just did it one day. We were all out in the back at the Humane Society. And about six of us were playing with our dogs. And I'd always done it with my dogs. And Luke was playing. He was fine. We'd had him for several months. He turned around and saw a poodle and nailed it. Just went right for him, did this whole thing, knocked the dog down, did a standover, did not do anything because I got in there. I didn't grab his ear, but I got right in there and stopped it. And after that, that was it. That was it. He was no longer okay to be with other dogs, which is really sad.
So it does blow my mind, like the thing of the H1-4 that maybe because we're all have a different frame of reference, but this owner, that after the first time, wasn't like, oh, well, can't go to dog parks anymore.
Well,
you know?
Okay, so there are some owners, and there are more male owners than female owners that somehow think that everything will be worked out all by itself if you don't do anything. And there are people all the time who, and then they go, well, I have to take my dog to the dog park because it needs exercise. And they're right, the dog needs exercise. And one of the things that I did while I was at the shelter, I don't know if they still do it, is we arranged to have people be able to rent the dog park for 15, 20 minutes at a time, so that if you had a dog that was not, the idea, I was just walking Luke one day and I thought it'd be so nice to have a big yard that I could throw the ball for Luke and that he'd be okay. And we have open space and we have places where nobody else goes, so we always had that for him. So I thought, well, the Humane Society, we had this dog park that was only open for the public in the morning and evening hours. So during the middle of the day, we charged a nominal fee and they could come in and play with their dogs. And, you know, so do they still do it? Because it's they didn't want to do it. But I didn't want the dog park to begin with. I fought against it tooth and nail. Really didn't like the idea of a dog park. I kept on saying, this is going to be perpetual employment opportunity for trainers. Because all these dogs are going to get wrecked and then come in and need some training, because they, you know, dog parks are hotbeds for bad behavior. But this was one of the things that really was helpful for it. And that, I think, is a really good way. It's like, you know, adult swim. There are times when a lot of dogs can play together, but there are these dogs that can't do it, and there needs to be a place and a time for them to be able to do it. And it's hard to do. Yeah.
But there's so many people who want that. They think that their dog needs to interact with their dogs. They want their dog to be social, and they know their dog can't.
He wants the dog to be social. And also people think that you can socialize your dog and that you've just adopted at the age of 3. And you're going, oh, I'm going to socialize him. It's too late.
I find that the hardest to explain to owners and parents that the dog is just...
The dog is an adult. It's like trying to socialize a 35-year-old introvert. And you know, you can't do it. You know, you can probably put a patina of like, all right, I'll be okay for a little while, but you can't socialize them. And in fact, after the age of 3, many of them who were social go, not anymore, that was fun, but I'm off doing something else now. Yeah.
My client adopted a dog for like a year and a half.
He has leash reactivity?
Yes.
Okay, so leash reactivity, the problem is that you can have a dog that plays very well and still is leash reactive because it's the leash that's causing the problem. It's not the fact that they can't play with other dogs.
Yeah, he's always been on leash. I put him on the line.
Is he reactive on the line?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
A little bit in the beginning, but now he's calmed down a lot.
But if they're on a short leash that or a shortish leash, that's that frustration that does it, and it's our fault because we teach the dogs that they can play with other dogs. If we taught dogs from the very beginning that they can't play with other dogs unless we've set it up, or you know, a dog park's required them to go to a dog park to actually walk on a leash, very very well, no pulling, no you know excitement when they get there. Then when we get to the dog park, they come in and they're already calm, we would have far fewer problems than we do. Okay, so I think that was... Oh, I did want to do another one. This is another bully thing. So this is a probably the same dog park. So the gray pit bull is playing with the boxer in no uncertain terms. So this is not a good play. Obviously, the gray pit bull's on top of the boxer.
No idea.
And the owner of the gray pit bull is standing right there. No, there's no switcherooing going on here. This is all one, this is very one-sided. The boxer is not happy. The boxer is actually trying to protect herself.
She's got some weird mutations.
Yeah, well, the guy actually, you can't hear, but he asks, he says, does anybody who owns this dog, should I stop my dog? But nobody's there. So this is, can you see the prey drive here? Can you see how happy he is? Okay, that was the owner, she's on the phone. And she just reaches down, and the gray pit just keeps on going. Yeah, Yeah, so what is she learning? Was she bleeding? No. So she didn't get injured. But what was she learning? Yeah, that other dogs are not trustworthy, that her owner is not going to take care of her, that dog parks are scary places to be. She's learning all that in one fell swoop. This is not a good place for her to learn it, not a good thing for her to learn. What has this dog learned? That nobody's going to stop me if I bully. And the dog parks are great places to chase animals.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's really happy because, again, remember I said, they're having fun. They are. This is not something that's aggressive. They are having fun. And I think there's, okay, and this is, I don't, can't remember if I showed you this one. This is a young dog learning to bully. Did I show you this one?
I don't know why I've seen it.
Okay, so this is a small dog, and the youngster is 3 months old. She's just doing fine on this. The healer is like, no, you do get. She's holding her back. And then now with a big dog, oh God, I better suck up to you. This is just, I mean, it's like, you know, people go, well, my dog sometimes behaves one way towards one dog and one way towards, you can see this happening. And then here's a little dog, another puppy, and look at the difference in the behavior. On top, look at the prey drive. Look at it kicking in. On top.
What is that?
So that bite on the top, that's a kill bite. Okay, now she's not intending to kill at this point, but that's what she's practicing. And is the little black dog having a good time?
No.
So can you see the differences in the behavior there? When with the healer, it was even Steven. With the Malinois, it was, oh my God. And this one, she just wants to be right. Okay.
So is that kind of a precursor when you see in that one doing that kill bite?
Yeah, I wouldn't adopt that dog out to just anybody, that's for sure. I would be very careful about who. Now, does that dog not need to be adopted out? No, we can't say that. It's obviously, it's got some social, it's very social with people, social with other dogs. You would just be very careful about who that dog is to play with. But for those of us in the shelter world, one of the things that happens is you adopt a dog out and that you say, okay, this dog is special, has some special needs, please don't have it play with small dog, blah, 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 blah. And they go, you don't know anything. And they leave. And they immediately take the dog to a dog park, and then they get upset when the dog does something they don't want. So, you know, you don't have a lot of credibility, even though you have been there for numerous years or whatever, because everybody thinks that all problems can be solved by just showering love on the dog. And that's going to be it. All right. And so this is in a daycare. This I was given permission to use this. So these two dogs are obviously picking on the little pointer. And he's trying to get away. So this is a really good example of what can happen in daycare if you're not watching what's going on. Yeah. It's a smallish room. Pardon? Yeah, this wasn't good. But I've gone to daycares and seen some of this stuff happen. There's one daycare I went to in San Francisco where they had 35 dogs and one person. And that's not okay. And here's another one. So this is too tense. It's not, there's no fight, it's just too tense. These dogs come home every night and they're exhausted. Not from having fun, but from being highly tense. Can you imagine being in an environment like that with all that noise all the time? Dogs in shelters have to do that. And we try everything we can to keep it calm. But this is, they're thinking this is a good thing, and it's not a good thing.
And when dogs get really crazy, play sheep. Oko, your back goes down. Okay.
Okay, and I'm going to do one other thing before, because we're going to do a consult, but I wanted to break, whoops. Dog, dog greetings. This is an awful one. Here he comes. That's a Luke greeting. Is he having a bad time? No, he's having a great time. This is what you're supposed to do. Oh, we're gonna end on this one, and then they take a break, okay? I just thought this was fascinating because one of our issues is that we believe snarling is always a threat when it is often a signal to back off. Most dogs will go to great lengths to avoid fighting. This is from the internet, but this is so good. Now look at this. This is amazing. So there's food over here. So the dog is actually guarding food. Can you see the bowl? Yeah? Okay. And so the other dog really wants to get to the food, but displaces on the yellow toy. Now watch what happens. Corgis can look so mean. There, I'm going to displace on that. I just bit you. It's a... Look how they lie down, totally separate from one another, not looking at each other. Corgis can be little pistols.
Pardon? They find the air, they don't find each
other. No. That displaced behavior was actually really... Aspen, come. Come over here. That corgis bite. I've been bitten by two corgis. They bite. Because they're herding dogs who go after cattle. Yeah. So then they bite really hard. They're like, ah. They can be. But these guys obviously live together. And so they have this ridiculous truce where they just don't want to be close to each other. And they're, you know, it looks... I can't imagine, they look like that neither one of them has missed any meal ever. So, but they're fighting over the food. But that displaced behavior just goes to show you how much they don't want to fight each other. And contrast that to the bully dog who really wanted to fight. I really want to get into this battle because it's so much fun. Is Aspen bugging your dog over there?
No, I don't mind.
Aspen, come here. Kennel, baby. Okay, let's take a 10-minute break.